Our thanks to the folks at Datadog for their continued support of Does Not Compute. Anyone who's helped build or maintain a modern web application knows how many different services they tend to communicate with. Datadog helps you wrangle all the information coming from those services. They integrate with over 200 popular systems out of the box, including Postgres, Slack, AWS, and Kubernetes. If you need to monitor something else, that's easy too. Datadog provides tools that make it simple to create custom integrations. After you've got your data pulled into Datadog, it's easy to visualize and act on with tools like anomaly detection, alert forecasting, and end-to-end request tracking. They also make it super easy to stay up to date with their pre-built and fully customizable dashboards. If you want a unified view of all the systems, apps, and services you use, make sure to check out Datadog at datadog.com/doesnotcompute. Thousands of companies use Datadog to collect, visualize, and act on the metrics from all their systems. Sign up for a free trial at datadog.com/doesnotcompute and create your first dashboard, and they'll send you a free t-shirt. Make sure to check out Datadog today. It's been a long week, man.
It has been.
What did we say when we tried to record this originally? Fog-brained? Pouring rice down the sink? Something.
Yeah. I was trying to say what I felt like was, so chefs call it the, I can't even remember that term now, but when you drain pasta or rice, the water is full of the starch.
Starchy water, yeah.
Yeah, some people call it liquid gold because they use it to thicken sauces up because the starch will make it thick. And most people just pour it down the drain, which is what I feel like. I feel like I'm the starch that came off of a bunch of rice.
You feel like some liquid gold being poured down the drain?
I feel like...
That's what your brain feels like
right now. I feel like my brain's sticky. Have you ever seen Fern Gully? I feel like the bad oil guy that lives in the trees is sticky and the slow moving.
I have not seen Fern Gully. It's one of those things. I haven't seen so many things.
I'm running out of...
five movies, man.
I'm running out of analogies here. I'm running out of like 90s animated analogies.
All right, so why was this week so long, man? Why do you think this week was so long?
That's a good question. Maybe because of the weather. The weather's been crappy here. Actually, I had to scrape a layer of ice off of a car last night, which was so fun. And then
woke up. it's been like in the 20s and 30s for you pretty much all week, right?
Yeah, and it snowed last night, and it's supposed to snow a bunch today too. God. So there's that.
That's wild. It was 80s and 90s for me most of the week. So that's kind of funny.
Yeah. And I was feeling good because I was getting a lot more vitamin D. I think I just need to take more vitamins. That's really what I'm getting at. But I was outside more and soaking in the sun. Like I would sit on the stairs. I would sit on the stoop outside my apartment and just sit in the sun and watch these doves pick worms out of the ground. But now they're gone. Most of them are gone. I heard some crazy birds out yesterday or earlier today. But yeah, the sun's gone. So I think that really has a lot to do with it. It's kind of being cooped up more, but also just, I think maybe more complicated work too. Like we were pairing on a lot of stuff this week, which we had started to talk about. And I think also on top of all of that, the code that I've been working on and thinking about is some code that, it's like, it's not inherently like the task at hand isn't that complicated. It's that the conditions under which the original implementation was created is what made it difficult. Being rushed.
That's so much.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
Oh, no, it's fine. Just being rushed and having like multiple passes, like taking multiple passes on a thing without being able to like really shake the foundations of it is what also makes it more difficult. Because then you have multiple passes of context you have to keep in mind. And I've done, I think, an okay job of documenting it, leaving comments and documenting functions and things. But it's just, I think it was just one of those weeks where I was like, did I implement any of it correctly the first time? And I don't know. Like, what did I say to you? I remember this. I said something about maybe the only thing I did right about the shipping was how the rates are returned. And you said, it's just sometimes just one of those days.
Yeah, it's a lot of what we do on Design Collective, at least right now, is just dealing with stuff that was hastily put together for an MVP. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just the stage we're at. And that's all right, because the way we're approaching it, when we come up against these problems, we've structured our tasks in such a way that we can take the time to actually improve things instead of just bolting another thing onto it.
Yeah.
And then making this problem bigger in the future where it's like five passes instead of three. Now, then we're actually reducing and reducing the amount of logic, reducing the amount of complexity back down to a sensible, maintainable level. And so I think as long as we keep doing that and just keep powering through all this stuff, we will get to a point where we have something that can be maintained and extended and built upon for hopefully many, many years.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
So
that's the theory.
Yeah. The cool thing is that I see different patterns being distilled out of things, which is nice. So like when I ported things to Elixir, it wasn't like a rewrite of the app. It wasn't a rewrite at all. So I copied flaws and everything. I copied the good and the bad over just because it had to get
done. It was pretty much just a translation. It wasn't a refactor. It was just taking something written in one language and then rewriting pretty much the exact same thing in a different language.
Yeah. So what I see happening is as we work on these things, certain things are being distilled down into patterns that seem to work well. And so we're accumulating those patterns. And it's not like we're getting more and more patterns. It's just that we're seeing the same patterns being reused across the board now, whereas before it was just a lot of procedurally implemented things coming from Ruby into Elixir. And
I think a great example of this is something that you were working on this week with the flat rate shipping. So we have an option that stores can say this item is just, it costs, you know, $50 or whatever to ship, and that's it. And you were refactoring how that was done. Originally, that was split out so that flat rate shipping worked entirely differently than carrier-based shipping, like if we get a quote from UPS or whatever.
Yep.
But now, the flat rate shipping just acts as if it is from a carrier, but it's just marked internally as being the flat rate shipping for a store. And so we've taken this thing that was two systems, but unnecessarily, and then brought that back in, kind of reined it back in to just be one thing again. And I think that's where we're really making some great progress, is in areas like that.
Interfaces. It seems like we're coming up with more consistent interfaces, which seems to work well. And the funny thing was, and it's funny because I look back at the context of like the conversations and the planning, and like seeing why flat rate was treated as something that runs parallel to shipping and not part of like a rate system. So our shipping system, I basically made an interface that returns a unified data structure, whether the data comes from EasyPost or ShipHawk or whatever API you're using, whether it comes
or any
from
future API.
Any future.
It's just generic.
It's just generic. Yeah. So instead of having to, as a store creates a product, they add flat rate shipping to it. And then as a user adds that to their cart, the flat rate shipping is copied. And then as a person selects their shipping stuff, instead of like trying to just keep passing that around, it made so much more sense to just, well, hey, why not like call this a store shipping rate and return that from the API just like any other rate would be returned. And that way the logic is encapsulated in the same place, because we have an interface. Basically, we have a thing called a shipping estimate, and we just have different types of them. So we have like an EasyPost shipping estimate, EasyPost rate rather, which is the logic that encapsulates getting rates, sending data to and getting information from EasyPost. And now we have a store shipping rate, which encapsulates any of the logic of pulling whatever flat rate numbers are on the products for that shipment, tallying those together and showing that as a store flat rate. I can't remember what the verbiage is on the front end, but it literally just looks the same. And so the interface is great. The logic is completely encapsulated. It's completely testable in isolation, because to write tests, we don't have to worry about mocking or stubbing anything for EasyPost, for example, if you're testing the store shipping rate. It's just, I don't know, just boiled down and as simple as it could possibly be for those different pieces. And then as far as the front end's concerned, I mean, it just gets a data structure and caches it. That's all. So
right. So no matter what carriers we add in the future, all we have to do is add a new type of rate for that carrier that deals with, you know, whatever API or whatever kind of logic that needs to happen to calculate those rates. And then on the front end, it doesn't even need to change, because it's just going to be receiving the same kind of data. And all it needs to know is that the user selected this one, and then just tell our API that. And so it allows us to make a much more complex system without increasing the burden on either ourselves or on users, which I think is really awesome.
But what was cool was that I was kind of like getting to that. So I had already gone and converted the flat rate stuff into being that rate structure that's returned. But I think I was too close to everything. So there was too much context in my mind stopping me from being able to see clearly, if that makes sense. So when you come in, you're like, oh, we can just change this and this function and we're good. And I was like, oh, I see it now. You know, like I couldn't see it before, but I see it now. And I was like getting there, but I couldn't really see through the fog in front of me, if that makes sense. So
absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's been one of the most amazing things about doing more pair programming. Over the last couple of weeks, I haven't really done a ton of pairing before.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done stuff where we'll like collaborate on problems a little bit here and there, but nothing to the level like what we've been doing over the last couple of weeks.
And this is kind of what I always wanted to do at Octopus. We just never had the time to. We never had
We were always on different projects. Like we worked at the same company at Octopus, but it was consulting. And because we were like the two highest level devs or whatever at that point, that's such a weird way to say that. But, you know, we always end up getting split on different projects. Octopus would have a couple large projects on at once, and then you would be on one of them. I would be on another one. And we would kind of like, we would talk and collaborate on things, but it was never being focused on the exact same issue, like truly focused as in this is the thing I need to accomplish today.
Yeah, yeah.
For both of us to be on that. And now that we have that, it's been great because like you're saying, it's so easy to get too close, too zoomed into a problem to where you can't see the larger picture and how the one piece of the puzzle that you're working on actually fits in with the rest of the pieces of the puzzle that are already in place.
Right.
I think that pairing really, really helps give you that sort of context because you can have one person who's zoomed in on the implementation, thinking about exactly what's happening, and then kind of a co-pilot who's like thinking about a bit of the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And so far that's worked out fantastically. We've been using the VS Code Live Share, I believe it's called.
Yep.
It's in beta right now, but there are still definitely some rough edges. And I think we talked about this a little bit on the show before, but it's amazing. It's really an incredible tool.
It's pretty
smooth. You just see the other person's cursor right there, and we're on opposite sides of the country, pretty much. You're on the East Coast, and I'm somewhere in the middle of the country, and it just works. It works great.
Yeah.
So we'll just hop on a call and then spend hours like just hammering through problems.
And it's funny because I think we even did some pairing where I was at Starbucks and I was tethered to my phone. And you were tethered to your phone somewhere. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, the only thing that didn't work as well, and it's not because of technology, it was just because of the speed of the internet that we had, was the port sharing, which is pretty cool. But
because it's sending uncompressed JavaScript, and you have like a massive vendor file and all that.
Yeah. But,
I mean, thankfully, at least the vendor file doesn't change too much.
Right, yeah. I had to go in my dev tools and turn off of the cache, the disable cache or whatever that was. And then it wasn't as bad, but it's still pretty cool that you're able to, you know, see, like we're able to like type at the same exact time. So you'll be like, what's funny is that I'll be like writing a new function and you're already renaming stuff, or you're in another place and you're actually using the function that I'm writing at the same exact time, which is really cool. And then you save a file and it runs a test on my system. I think that's maybe the coolest part, which, you know, it's, The test runners are watching the file system, so if it changes, it runs. But it's still cool that you're the one triggering test updates on my system.
Yeah, definitely. And I think what's really cool about doing pairing in this way is that we have two keyboards and two trackpads or two mice or whatever. Both of us can be doing input at the same time, which can get kind of messy, but I think for the most part, it's been fairly smooth. Like you say, one of us will be working on a function, the other person will be actually adding that function, like function calls to it in different spots where they need to be. And then it's just like you can kind of see what the other person is doing and predict what they're going to need done next and act on that. And it's awesome. It feels really cool.
It's even thinking about being productive in productivity, like you'll be writing something and you'll keep moving on some implementation details, and I'll notice like grammar or spelling or small just syntactical things from typing, and I'll just fix them. So you don't have to stop thinking about what you're thinking about. You can have that chance to form the complete sentence in your mind and translate that to code. And I'm going through and kind of cleaning up things here and there, or vice versa, which is, I think, it's just really nice. I think it allows us to flesh out ideas in a more complete manner. There's kind of like less distractions happening. There's less things catching my eye, which is really cool. But yeah, it's I'm a huge fan, and it's not like we're burning a whole lot of time doing it. And I think if anything, even though we're both spending time on the same problem, it makes us more productive in the long run.
I think we're actually putting out much better code.
Yeah,
higher quality stuff because we're both thinking about it. We're thinking about, oh, this should be tested from this point of view. This should be tested from over here. Or like, I was just working on this other system the other day, and it's relevant in this way.
Right.
And that kind of stuff is. It's like a great synergy.
Or yeah, a lot of it especially is because like you have the fresh context, like you have the fresh eyes, and I have the institutional knowledge on stuff, and I get blinded by what we were just talking about, by like past decisions and things being done a certain way, and like knowing how the Rails app, even though I didn't build the MVP, like knowing how that was constructed. And you're able to be like, why don't we just do this? I'm like, oh, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. I probably would never have thought of that because, again, I'm kind of stuck with all that information in my mind. But it's been
or
it's
on
been
the
great.
Flip side, that might make sense, but here's why we didn't
do it that way.
And now we can't change it. I think that's very important from both sides, like having the combination of the historical knowledge as well as the fresh perspective, I think is incredibly useful. It's almost like diversity of ideas is really important.
almost like that. It's cool. I mean, I talked to Lindsay about it and like described the process to her, and her reaction wasn't like, doesn't that waste time? Her reaction was, that sounds really cool and like a really good idea. So she gets it, which is cool. So it's nice not having like feeling pressured. Because I feel like a lot of, like some people when they talk about that, they get flack from other people like, oh, you're spinning your wheels or you're wasting twice as much time on a feature, which isn't true. But it also is nice because the stuff that we've been working on is really like core infrastructure. Like if this stuff doesn't work, then there's no trust between us and the customer. And there's like no trust between us and the stores, because if their shipping prices are wrong or if like numbers don't match on receipts, that's a pretty big deal. So... it's cool to have two eyes and two brains looking at stuff and double checking like, oh, have you thought about this or what happens in this scenario? How do we handle this situation if this goes wrong? So it's been really nice. I think my favorite change that we made in the last 2 weeks was like redoing how the charges work, because that was a whole thing, you know. I think originally when the MVP was made, it was kind of a escrow like setup, where the money was pooled and divvied up later. And we ended up making the decision to not do that and use Connect, and the money goes to the stores directly. But there's so many edge cases around an e-commerce system where one person can buy any number of products from any number of stores in the same order.
Right. And I think to your point about people saying that pairing can be a waste of time or a time sink or whatever, or just inefficient, I would agree with that. I think that it absolutely can be. I wouldn't want to, for example, work on like front end bugs or like style changes or something like that.
Right.
Pairing. I don't think that would be efficient. I don't think it would be useful. I don't think it would be helpful. But like you said, for this core stuff, for stuff like how do we handle email subscriptions, which is a major part of our app and how stores communicate with their users. That is a really core thing. How do we deal with charges? How do we deal with all this escrow stuff? How do we deal with people purchasing from multiple stores or choosing multiple shipping methods from a single store? And how do we distribute that money and make sure that all the charges go through? These are really big problems. These are really big, really important problems. And I think, yes, there probably is some sort of efficiency penalty, because it is obviously it's two people spending work hours on one thing. But the benefits for these core things, like having the multiple perspectives on these big issues, I think far outweighs any time loss. In fact, it might be more time up front, but I think in the long run, what we're going to see is that those things that we're both working on are going to be a lot more rock solid and result in fewer bugs and fewer distractions in the future.
Right. You're saving time in the future. Yeah. 100% agree. Yeah. It's just been really good for me. And it's funny because I was talking about how I'm just zapped out from this last week, even though we were doing a lot of programming. It's funny talking about like how, you know, beneficial it is. But I don't know. It's just I think it was one of those weeks paired with it, because we're like running through all the stuff that's like the things that I know that need to be changed or need to be fixed They just haven't had time to. Just stuff like that, I think. I think that weighs on me, you know? I think, like, in my subconscious, it just, like, is there churning. And what's even crazier is that I can go to class in jiu-jitsu, and, like, I've been doing it for almost a year now, so people, like, we know each other there. You know, people know me, I know them, and they can tell when I'm distant or, like, my mind is somewhere else, you know? In the last week, I had more people mention to me that I seemed preoccupied with something, more so than I had in the last few weeks or a couple of months or something like that. So I think that's probably what I had a lot to do with as well, is knowing that there's stuff about shipping that needs to change, just not having time to do it, not having the time budget to do it, knowing about the stuff for the charges that we needed to change and just not being able to do it. And it's weird because, like, I'll apologize to you and say, like, yeah, I know that should be different. And you're like, it's really not your fault, because you don't have, who has the time? There's two of us now and we still don't have time, you know? But it's just weird how that weighs on you.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you feel personally responsible for this stuff. And I mean, you did write the code. Like, it's not that you didn't write the code, but when you're feeling that sort of responsibility as a developer, or feeling like your life, like it's taking away from the rest of your life, I think it's really important to remember that you're being paid for 40 hours a week,
right?
Or something around 40 hours a week. And there's just physically and mentally, there is only so much you can do in 40 hours a week. That's just, there is an actual limit. And I think recognizing that and understanding that and not getting too down on yourself because of that is really important. And this is something that I struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot. I think both of us do, because you do feel that. You feel that responsibility, that sense of, I know this could be better. I'm the one who made it. It should be better. But at the same time, we are human beings.
Yeah.
And that's so important to keep in mind. And, like, sometimes you are just going to have one of those weeks where you feel like, I wish I had gotten these five more things done. But you just can't. You just mentally don't have the gumption or whatever,
right? Yeah,
to get it done, and that's just part of being alive, I think.
I think that is maybe the hardest part for me. It's the hardest part about software development, is having that separation. And I probably worked more than I should have at Octopus, like put in more time than I should have. I think a lot of that was due to just timeline constraints in consulting, but it's weird. So, like, I'm trying to reconcile, like, being CTO and having responsibility of a whole bunch of stuff, and also, like, going to jiu-jitsu and not thinking about work at all, you know, and, like, knowing my phone's in my bag and knowing that there's emails coming in, you know, and, like, being able to shut that off is something that I haven't really figured out how to do. And then, like, something I need to figure out, and I'm trying to figure out how to do. So I'm using more tools like Do Not Disturb, and I have, like, Do Not Disturb auto set for certain hours. Because I know you're around at those hours, but those are also the hours that I'm training or exercising. But also, like, I think a lot of it comes down to discipline too. So you think about, like, the, I don't know what the proper term is, but, like, the psychology behind, like, overworking or thinking about work on off hours. And I think, and when I say discipline, I don't mean the willpower just to not think about it, because I don't know if that's even a thing, right? But I mean discipline in other areas. So I know that if I exercise daily, I feel much better about life. I feel much better about work. I feel much better about everything. I have more energy. I feel better, right? I know that when I stretch, I feel better. My body feels better. My mind is more clear. And if I pair exercise and stretching, it tends to mean that when I leave work, or after work hours, I'm not actually stressed out about that kind of stuff. I don't know how it works together, but it does. And so I think a lot of it is about me being disciplined in not, like, skipping the small things, like making sure I'm eating right, making sure I'm exercising, making sure I'm resting my eyes and taking frequent breaks, right? So I think, like, last week could be the culmination of me skipping little things throughout the previous weeks because of things being busy and features needing to roll out.
Yeah, that can definitely happen. It's so easy to neglect, to just be like, oh, I'm gonna skip my run today, even though I really want to do one, or I'm gonna just grab a cheeseburger instead of like taking the time to make something a little bit healthier. It's so easy to do that. And I think the other side of discipline is actually when you sit down to work, actually sitting down to work and not sitting down to check Twitter for a bit and maybe browse Reddit and then do some work and then check Twitter for a bit. I mean, this is a common thing for software developers, right? Is that you're at the computer, but you're not actually necessarily doing all the stuff. And that's something that I've been really forced to focus in on over the last month traveling around in the RV, is I don't have time for that. I don't use Twitter anymore. I don't really use any of these things anymore because I just can't. I have other stuff to do. I have to get water. Get rid of water.
Yeah.
I have to make sure my solar panels are charging correctly. I have to do electrical change. It's like I have other life stuff going on and really being able to sit down and say, okay, now I'm going to focus on work for how much time do I have? Okay, 1 hour. I'm going to focus in on work for 1 hour. I'm not going to open Twitter at all. I'm not going to do any of these things. I'm going to sit down. I have to tackle issue 575 and issue 621.
Right.
And just start those branches, start typing stuff, get that stuff committed, get it pushed up, move on with my life. And that's something that is, it's not always easy. And I'm still getting better at it, but it's really important, especially for the lifestyle that I currently am living.
Yeah. Yeah. It is really important. It's, I've been using, I talked about this a long time ago, but an app called Focus, I think it's called, I think the domain's like Hey Focus app. And what it does is whatever apps I tell it to not allow me to use or websites I tell it to not allow me to use, I have like a schedule from, I think it turns on at 9 a.m. and it turns itself off at 6 p.m. And any time I try to open up Twitter or go to twitter.com or mobile.twitter or whatever, even spectrum.chat, it just shows me a quote instead, like some inspiring quote. So I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. So even if it's like hard-coded into my fingers, command tab, command T, twitter.com, you know, it stops me from kind of being in an automated checking Twitter mode, which is nice.
I think one of the biggest things for me that has helped with not just opening a new tab and typing in twitter.com or reddit.com or facebook.com or whatever is I have this Chrome extension. I think it's just called Motivation. But all it does is you enter your birthday and it shows your age. So right now when I hit command T, I see age 27.9973415 2, and then the last number is too fast. But it's just a reminder that literally my life is ticking away every time I type anything in a URL bar. And that has been, I've been using this for like a couple of years now, I think, and I love it. It's one of the greatest things I've ever added to my web browser.
Let's see. I just added it just now. 30.9707141. That's crazy.
I mean, it's a little morbid, but
sure.
It works.
What
you see that and you're like, this year's almost up. Do I really want to go to Reddit?
Yeah, it was.
Or do I just want to go do more work?
Right. I had one of those weird moments too, where yesterday my dad texted me and said, I'm a decade away from being midlife because I'm 30 right now. I'm turning 31 soon. I won't say when, because according to people that ask me, I don't have a birthday. But it was just a weird, like a tweet to caught me on guard. I was like, yeah, I mean, a decade is a decade, but a decade also goes quickly. Especially the older you get. That's the one thing I keep learning is that like the older you get, the faster time moves.
This year is going to be a decade since my wedding anniversary, like in a few months here, which is just crazy. And thinking about that, I'm just trying to think about time more, I guess.
Sure. Yeah.
Because like that's it. Everybody has a hard stop and all you can do is do everything that you can, like produce everything you can to hopefully leave the world a little bit better place once you're gone.
Yeah.
And this episode got depressing.
No, I don't think it got depressing. I think
more inspirational,
encouraging maybe. I don't know. I like talking about the kind of stuff because it's so easy to get kind of stuck in the day-to-day stuff and on autopilot. I think a lot of people live their entire lives going to work and going home and thinking about that. That's what they think about, you know. It's interesting because you go and talk to anybody and everyone has dreams, but how many people are actually working towards something, have a goal that they're working towards? A lot of people don't even have goals. They might have actual goals, but they don't do anything.
We all just have one shot to, like, if you have a dream, if you have some sort of goal, you have one chance to make that happen.
Yeah.
So you better be working on it as much as you can.
It's like just keeping, you know, keeping perspective on things. We talk about reflection a lot. We talk about introspection a lot. And that's kind of what it is. It's kind of like reflecting on what you want to do and introspecting, thinking like, how, what am I doing now to achieve that? Because the decade will pass. And if you don't kind of, if you don't keep that in mind over the decade, then you won't have done it. You know, that's 10 years. Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to bum people out, but it is something that I think about, you know, and it is interesting. Like, cause you and I have talked, I don't know if we've mentioned this, but we've like kind of want Design Club to be like our last tech jobs. Like, not that I don't want to be doing technical stuff or working in tech. It's just that I feel like I found something that I want to work on and found something that I think helps people, which is what makes me care about it. And now it's less about programming because I think programming is fun and because I think technology is cool, and programming because there's something that I want to accomplish with it.
Yes, absolutely. And this is something that I say all the time, but programming for me has always been and will always be a means to an end. I program because I want to make cool stuff that people love using. That's it. I don't care about the program. I do. Like, I enjoy it. I enjoy the meta of it. You know, I do get nerdy about programming stuff, but that's not why I do it. That's not what drives me to program.
Right.
What drives me to program is wanting to make cool stuff that people love using. And that's it. Full stop.
Yeah, maybe I should, I always talk about slapping post-it notes on stuff, right? Maybe I should make a Chrome extension where you can add one message to yourself. And then every time you see a new tab, you see that message and your age, maybe. I don't know. Your time's running out.
That'd be cool.
There was somebody said, I can't remember who said it was. They had like a timeline and it showed their life on the timeline. And so it had like a beginning and an end based off of average life expectancy in the U.S., and I thought that was pretty interesting because it was like...
Oh, I think that's a Dustin Curtis thing.
Yeah, and he even had like a percentage, like, my life is 30% complete. It's like, wow, man.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it can be depressing to think about stuff in that way, but I think really it can also just be inspirational. It's just a matter of perspective.
Sure.
Nice uplifting podcast.
Yeah.
All right, man. Have a nice rest of your Sunday.
I'm not as tired as I was before, so it did some good.
Yeah, gotta get up and get going.
Yeah.
We're getting old.
Yeah. I get up and get on the couch and take a nap because that's what I need to do. All right, I'll talk to you later.
Thanks again to Datadog for sponsoring Does Not Compute. Most apps these days talk to a ton of different services, and it can be super difficult to keep track of all the metrics coming from those systems. Datadog solves that problem by aggregating the data from all the apps, systems, and services you use. They integrate with over 200 services out of the box and make it easy to build out your own custom integrations. Once all your systems are communicating with Datadog, they make it simple to visualize and act on all that data. Take a look at datadog.com/doesnotcompute to start your free trial, and they'll send you a free t-shirt when you create your first dashboard.